Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we have music in conversation with Lou Christie, part of Legends of the 60s at the California Theater, December 29th. As we leave National Diabetes Awareness Month, Lillian Vasquez speaks with country singer Ben Rue. He was performing in the area recently and lives with diabetes.
Lights up on Washington Heights, up at the break of day, I wake up and I got this little punk.
To start the program, we'll hear about In the Heights, presented by the San Bernardino Valley College Theater Department. That's coming up December 6th through the 9th. Lillian recently spoke with Julie Edwards Matanga, music director at San Bernardino Valley College Theater Arts Department, and Aaron Sines, who has the lead in the play.
So nice to have both of you here in our studio. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Great to be here.
Julie, let me start with you. Will you share some insight about the show? I know that it's an earlier project of Lin-Manuel Miranda, who's associated with the Hamilton Broadway show, but I don't know enough about this show. Can you share a little bit about it?
This is a wonderful American story about a tight-knit community in the Washington Heights area of New York City, mostly Latino immigrants from various countries. There are kind of some love interests. One of the characters has a story that resonates a lot with me, being a first-generation college-educated student. I was the first in my family to attain a higher degree. And so this was the dream of a character. Nina is her name. She has been a scholastic star and got a scholarship to go to Stanford University. But unfortunately, when she gets to Stanford, she gets put on academic probation. The character Usnavi, who owns a bodega, he's kind of been orphaned. Abuela Claudia, who she's everybody's grandma. And the story centers around her good luck in winning the lottery. It's a story for everyone. I thought people would be very interested in it because of the success of Hamilton and also because of the subject matter.
Aaron Sines has been cast in the lead role, and Aaron has autism. Aaron will be playing the role of Usnavi. Now, autism is a disorder that is close to my heart. Aaron, how did you feel when you were told you got the lead male role?
Well, it was a feeling that I never felt before in my life. See, I found out that I wanted to be an actor when I was a preteen. Like maybe I was 10 years old. And since then, my parents have supported me with that. They found a lot of different acting classes for me to take, and some of them ended with showcases, and those were all really fun to do. Fast forward to San Bernardino Valley College. For almost every semester, I've auditioned, and I was part of the plays and the one musical. They were all in smaller parts, and even though I wanted bigger parts, the small parts were still really fun to do, and I still got to hang out with all these wonderful people and make the best of friends and have such an amazing time putting on these shows. It was fun every single time.
How has this experience been for you now that you're in the lead role?
Well, the first musical that I did 2 years ago, which was Avenue Q, I said that that was the happiest time of my life. And now, being the lead in the Heights, this might be the happiest time of my life now.
My guests are Julie Edwards Matanga. She is the musical director at San Bernardino Valley College, and Aaron Sines is a student at Valley College and is playing the lead role. One of the characteristics that sometimes comes with autism is obviously a great mind for details and memorization. Have you already learned your lines, or was that challenging for you?
I've learned them pretty quickly. Yeah, that is a trait that I have been blessed to have thanks to my autism. Not to brag, but it seemed like I was the one who was most likely to get Usnavi. During auditions, from what I've heard, most of the other guys were too intimidated to play Usnavi because there's a lot of rapping, and Lin-Manuel being the kind of rapper and writer that he is, he's pretty rapid fire. Well, I was up for the challenge.
Julie, how has it been for you working with Aaron and his autism?
I think that Aaron's autism is a gift. I'm amazed by him and his wonderful, brilliant mind. It is a steel trap. He has made my job so easy because he came absolutely perfectly prepared. I mean, to teach the raps, I'm pretty old school, and this is the first time I've ever had to teach rap to students. And it's probably pretty funny to see a middle-aged woman
it is pretty rap. Funny, actually.
The kids get a real kick out of it when I said, no, the rhythm is da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But Aaron knew it cold. I've not had to teach him one of the raps. We have to do a little vocal coaching on the vocal parts.
Yeah,
but
singing.
He is wonderful. I have barely had to coach him with any of it.
Aaron, let me ask you about the audition process for you. What did you use as your material for your audition?
When the time came for me to properly audition for the part of Usnavi, I did the sung part that they gave to me. And then they asked me if I know any of his raps. And I already had the opening number, the first song, all memorized and ready.
So you were prepared.
Yes, I was prepared.
Nice job, Aaron. Julie, have you cast or worked with other actors with autism in the past?
I have. We've had, it seems every production there's been a student who has this gift. I'm going to call it a gift. And this is a place where they can flourish. It's a great environment. And I have to say that I've only had absolute joy working with them. And some of them have been the most talented students that we have. They're hyper focused and, like I say, detail oriented. So this perspective and the way they are wired really lends itself to arts, I think. Arts in general.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I'm so glad you said it, and you said it so well. Aaron, what do you want to do next?
I don't know. I mean, originally, I found out that I wanted to be an actor when I was 10 from watching a lot of TV. From watching those shows and realizing how much fun it probably is for all those people to just get together and tell a story to either make someone laugh or make someone cry. It was like, I want to be a part of that. And what also drew me to it was how one of the downsides that I have to deal with because of autism is that a lot of times it's hard for me to understand other people, like what they mean when they say things with their tone of their voice or the look on their face. Even today, I still struggle with trying to understand what people mean when they say things. And I guess I figured out from the idea of learning the words of someone else and being able to present those words of someone else in a way that everybody will understand and connect with, I feel like that would give everyone the impression that I do understand other people. I know what feelings are. I can understand experiences of other people, and I can share those experiences, not just of mine, but of other people, to everyone in a way that they can grasp and understand easily. And that's what I got the idea from watching a lot of TV. As far as acting goes, I don't want to limit myself to any kind of medium. I'm mostly into movies, but I'm likely to allow myself to go into television and theater as well.
So you're keeping your options open.
Yes. If I didn't keep my options open, I wouldn't be doing In the Heights. I didn't think musicals was for me. I never thought that my first lead role in a stage production, even if it's just a community college production, still, it's a lead role in a stage production where I'm playing a Latino character who doesn't just sing, he also raps.
Aaron, I'm going to just say to you, you shouldn't say that it's just a community college. When I went to a community college and I was a theater major, I never had a lead role. So it's something, and be proud. My guests have been Julie Edwards Matanga, who is the musical director at San Bernardino Valley College Theater. Aaron Sines is playing the lead role of Usnavi. The show is In the Heights. The performance dates are December 6th through the 9th, right here on the beautiful campus of San Bernardino Valley College. Thank you both for coming in.
Our joy. Hope to see you all there, San Bernardino.
Yes.
This is a gem of an auditorium, and it's going to be a wonderful production. You're going to enjoy it so much.
You definitely won't be disappointed.
Thank you, guys.
And thank you, Lillian. Now to take us out of this segment, Aaron Sines, again with the lead in the Heights, with a piece he was speaking about just a few moments ago.
There's a breeze off the Hudson, and just when you think you're sick of living here, the memory floods in. The morning light off the fire escapes. The nights in Bennett Park blasting Big Pun tapes. I'ma miss this place, to tell you the truth. Kevin dispensing wisdom from his dispatch booth. And at dawn, Vanessa at the salon. We gotta move on, but who's gonna notice we're gone? When our job's done, as the evening winds down to a crawl, son, can I ease my mind when we're all done? When we've resigned in the long run, what do we leave behind? Most of all, I'll miss Abuela's whispers, doing the lotto pick six every Christmas. In 5 years, when this whole city's rich folks and hipsters, who's gonna miss this raggedy little business?
Aaron Sines with the lead in the Heights. Again, that's December 6th through the 9th here on the campus of San Bernardino Valley College. More at valleycollege.edu, then search for In the Heights. Also coming up December 9th, Valley College transforms into a winter wonderland of sorts with music and games, pictures with Santa, food and more. Information on this at valleycollege.edu/winterfest. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Later in the program, we'll have music in conversation with Lou Christie, part of Legends of the 60s at the California Theater in San Bernardino, December 29th. First, as we leave National Diabetes Awareness Month, we have Lillian Vasquez in conversation with country singer Ben Rue, performing in the area recently and living with diabetes.
Well, happy hour was a big letdown. It's hard to find good help in this town. Almost midnight, and I still miss her. I need a better bartender.
Welcome. Thank you for being a guest.
Well, thank you for having me, Lily. Yeah, I'm glad you liked what you hear, and please share with anyone. I appreciate it.
I will. Okay, so let's start at the beginning. What's your story, and where'd you grow up?
Yeah, well, I'm from Oregon. I grew up on a family farm out there. My dad still works on it with my two older brothers, and my mom's a nurse. So that was kind of my life as a kid, working on the farm every summer. That was my summer, driving combine every summer for about 10 years.
Okay. When did you start singing and writing songs, and what were your early subject matters?
Actually, my mom plays 5 or 6 instruments herself. So she had always tried to get us kids into playing music, piano, and we always wanted to play sports. But I did a couple insane talent show when I was in 6th grade. That was my first, like, real performance, which I try to forget. But it was fun, and I didn't really get into writing music, though, until I was in college. My brother plays a little guitar, too, and I like to think I can do anything he can, so... I started playing guitar and writing a couple songs. They weren't very good, but you got to start somewhere.
And when you started playing guitar, were you taking lessons? Were you following your brother, your mom? How did you learn to play?
You know, it's amazing what you can learn from YouTube. I would go on YouTube and learn a few chords, and you can play thousands and thousands of songs by just 3 chords. And so I learned 3 chords and then started learning a few songs. wrote a couple, learned a few more chords, and, you know, then kind of opened up the rest of the doors for me.
That's quite interesting. Never would have guessed that YouTube would have been your first instructor.
Well, it's a lot cheaper in college, too, than going and hiring someone to help you.
You mentioned you played sports and you have brothers that played sports, and your story has a baseball theme in it as well. I have to bring it up. Huge baseball fan that I am.
Are you? Awesome.
I am. And so, you know, I'm one of those persons that's trying to get to every major league ballpark. So
that's one of my dreams, too. So
I have seven more to go, so I'm almost there. But I digress. Let's talk about baseball and you. Did you play baseball as a little kid all the way through high school and into college?
My brothers and I are always super competitive, and we played three sports our whole life, baseball, basketball, football. And once I got to high school, I kind of just focused on baseball and basketball, and I got, I guess, pretty good for our small town there and had an opportunity to play college ball. So I went and played in Portland, Oregon, played baseball for a small college up there. And from there, I got the opportunity to go and play for an independent league in Michigan afterwards. And it didn't pay much.
Right,
I think after taxes, my paycheck was around $530 a month. But it was still cool to see my name on it with, you know, with a baseball logo on the check, and something that I don't take for granted, for sure.
And did you have your name on a uniform?
I did.
So that's kind of cool, too.
And I got a little baseball card, too, out of it.
That's always cool. You left baseball, or baseball left you, whichever way you play that. You're in college. You're playing music. Are you one of those guys that ever formed a band and played somewhere just to see if you could entertain somebody?
Yes. So my first band was a couple guys from my baseball team, and we would write songs in the computer lab, and they were terrible songs, but it was still fun. And there's a surveillance camera in the computer lab. We would always have our rehearsals under surveillance, and so our band name then hence was Under Surveillance. And it lasted for about a year. We just did, like, little coffee shops around. But, you know, it was just kind of an icebreaker to me as an artist, and writing songs and forming a little band. It was fun.
I just turn my head when I see one, and it seems half this farm and town bought out the lot. I wish they'd find new roads to drive, 'cause every time that one goes by, I think it's her in circle around the block. That's why I hate Chevys, 'cause they don't break down like I am now. With them there ain't no doubts, no worries, 'cause that engine's strong and it gets you gone in a hurry, hurry. I never thought that truck would outlast our love, but it goes and goes and keeps her away from me. That's why I hate Chevys.
Now, when you think about just performing that little band in the coffee shop, and maybe people would listen in a coffee shop, they're usually doing their own thing and on the internet or such, but how did you feel about performing in front of them, or when they did respond? How was that for you?
Oh, I was scared to death.
Oh.
Scared to death. I think you have to be, because it shows that you care, you know? But yeah, we would play a couple songs that we had written the day before or a couple days before, and maybe a cover here and there, not much more than 15 or 20 minutes. But, you know, doing something brand new, having them up there definitely helped a little bit. We were nervous for sure, especially because our audience at the time was just, you know, we'd have a bunch of our friends come out and show support, but still, like, it's still nerve-wracking when you do something new in front of your friends.
Sure. So I hope at some point in your career you'll have a baseball song in you, whether it's a Kenny Rogers type baseball or a John Fogerty center field. I hope there's a baseball song in you in your career sometime.
Oh yeah, I've been asked that multiple times, but I love that Kenny Rogers song.
It's a good one.
Growing up, yeah, that's definitely one of my faves.
Let's talk about some of your music and some of the titles of your songs. You either must really have fun with your music, or you have somebody helping you with, or maybe you just enjoy coming up with names of your songs. I mean, I hate Chevys. My husband is probably, veins are probably popping out with the fact that that's the name of a song, or Let Him Loose, Making Out, Better Bartender. So tell me about your music.
You know what, though, with some of those songs, the thing about songwriting is finding ways to say something different than anyone's ever heard, or spinning words in a different way. So I Hate Chevys. It's so funny when I say that title. Chevy fans around the house are always like, ooh, you know.
Yeah, I
but
bet.
If you actually listen to the song, it's all about how Chevys run well and how this girl, like, she's never coming back because her Chevy's never going to break down. I mean, she's just going.
Right.
And so it's funny when, you know, when they hear the through the first chorus, they're like, okay, I got you. But in Making Out the same way, it's just spinning a phrase that you hear often in another way. And so, yeah, that's the beauty of songwriting, is finding ways to say things differently.
My guest is Ben Rue, country singer and songwriter, with songs like I Hate Chevys, Let 'Em Loose, I Can't Wait, and Hail Mary. Your voice and your storytelling, I think, really work. I hope that you'll continue and that, like I said, there's a baseball song in you. Let's talk about your relationship with diabetes. It is National Diabetes Month, and I know you've lived with it. How did you first learn? Why were you tested?
My mother was a nurse. She's retired now, but she used to bring home little gadgets to test on us kids for fun. So one day she brought home a glucometer from work, and randomly my brothers were normal, 80 to 110, 120, whatever it is, and mine was 555. So I remember very distinctively, like, I win, you know, that's the high score. I beat them. But she kind of got serious, and kind of a tear swelled up in her eye, and she was like, we need to go to the doctor tomorrow. And I was like, all right, that's not good. Something's about to change. I have no idea how long I was diabetic before we found out either. So it was definitely a God thing to find out the way I did.
You were involved as a youth. You went to camp and then later became a counselor. How was that camp experience for you as a youngster?
I mean, that was pivotal. That was the moment I realized that I wasn't in this alone. I grew up in a small town in Silverton, Oregon, and there was maybe one other person that had diabetes, but I didn't really know them. And so I just had this feeling of being alone, that no one really understood what I was doing. But this camp that I went to, there's 65, 70 kids from all around the country that are living with what I am living with. But a lot of them are further along in their, you know, the journey with diabetes, and so they have a lot of experience to pass on to me. And that's the biggest thing about this, and is we're all in it together. You need to find your support group, because there's a lot more people out there than you think that are just like you. And don't be afraid to ask questions.
And do you think later, when you were a counselor, that you were able to pass that on to some of the younger kids that were feeling like their life was over?
I hope so. Yeah, I take that. That's very important to me, to not just show up to camp for myself to have fun, but knowing that stuff that I say, experiences that I talk about, people are going to take home with them.
Sure.
You know, kids are going to take home with their parents and talk about. And yeah, I think it's super important to just be open with conversation and how you treat yourself, you know, how what your daily routines are.
Okay, so let's talk about the campaign. What's the hashtag?
The hashtag is it's Buck Off Diabetes.
Buck.
And
off.
Yeah, it's a
diabetes.
It's a fun play on words, yeah. But it's a national awareness program that embodies this bold new attitude for taking on diabetes. And working with my friends at AccuCheck Guide, traveling around the country, showing people how they can get involved by saving a buck and also donating a buck to a good cause.
And how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, thank you for asking. First, you can save a buck with the AccuCheck Guide Simple Pay Card, which you pay the same low price for testing strips, which I promise you is very crucial and important, because they can get expensive, but they don't have to be. And you can also donate a buck by taking your bullhorns in your hand. I don't know if you can. I'm trying to show you over the phone, but you can't see it.
I know. I'm making my hands here in the studio. If you could see me, the horns,
see,
right?
Yeah. I see you. And then you take a picture with your bullhorns, upload it to your social media with the hashtag Buck Off Diabetes, And for every post that goes up, Roche Diabetes Care will donate $1 to a diabetes-related organization.
Awesome. Well, I'll do it as soon as we get off the air.
Yeah, and for anyone, it's very easy, very simple. It takes 20 seconds out of your day, and, I mean, you're helping a good cause while you're doing it.
Well, thanks for that, and thanks for what you're doing there. I want to transition back to, you know, Oregon is a long way from Nashville. How did your family feel about the move and or the opportunity or the changes that were coming to your world?
I don't think they really knew, to be honest. You know, no one in my family had ever done anything like this. The thing about our small town is build your roots, hang out there, get married young, and build a family. And I kind of went a different route, and so we were all kind of learning it together. They definitely supported me, and they still do. You know, I'm kind of the crazy dreamer in the family. I've between going to school for a baseball scholarship, traveling cross country for baseball in Michigan, or picking up and traveling to Nashville for music. I kind of do things out of the norm, but we talk to each other probably 2-3 times a week, and they're always asking what's going on. They want to be in the know just as much as I do.
Were you ever singing in the fields?
Oh gosh. Yeah, I remember. So I started driving combine when I was about, 11 full-time, 10, 12 hours a day. And so I would listen to Garth Brooks, Jody Messina, Alan Jackson, and just every station that I would have on quick dial, you know, would be every country station around the area. So when they'd go commercial, I'd switch to the next country station and just live for all those stories that people talked about in their songs, which is why I love country music so much. It's just the real stuff, the stories that, you know, are very unique.
Well, that's very similar to public radio, because public radio is about telling a story. What artists, you just named a few, were you listening to growing up, and was there any influence there from some of the artists that you just mentioned, or were there other artists that were influential?
Oh, totally, yeah. So I love, like I mentioned, story songs from Garth Brooks and Alan Jackson and George Strait, and I love the melodies of Diamond Rio, and even like Jody Messina is one of my favorite woman artists of all time. I mean, I listen to basically everything, but like death metal. That I was never into rock, that like hard rock and roll stuff. But I'll tell you, I had the opportunity to go see Garth Brooks in concert last year for the first time in my life. And that is life-changing. I mean, he is, in my opinion, the greatest, definitely hands down the greatest country entertainer of all time, but in my opinion, he's like the greatest entertainer of all time. He's so genuine with the crowd, loves every moment, takes time for every single person there.
Wow.
And is someone that I want to be when I grow up, for sure.
At this point in your career, which of your songs do you enjoy performing? I know you perform them all, you love them all, but which do you enjoy performing?
That's like asking who your favorite child is.
I know, but come on. Maybe because of the feedback from the audience or the atmosphere that it creates in the room, which song does that for you or for your audience?
There's an artist friend of mine who was doing pretty well a few years back and said something that made me think, you know, anyone can get a crowd riled up. Anyone can get a crowd screaming and yelling, but it's something else to get a crowd super quiet. And there's one song that I have called Hail Mary that I feel like I can silence the crowd, and they're listening, hanging on to every word. And that's a cool moment for me, is just, you know, it's like I'm playing as a bluebird in Nashville, you know, at these big venues, and it's all because they're just listening. They want to hear the song and the melody and where I'm going with it, and that's one of my favorite moments, yeah. So Hail Mary is probably one of my favorites to sing in front of a crowd, for sure.
Ben Rue is a country singer and songwriter. Thank you so much for your time and for your fun and entertaining music. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you, Lillian. I appreciate it.
That was Ben Rue in conversation with Lillian Vasquez. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Rounding out the show tonight, Lou Christie. He's part of Legends of the 60s, along with the Duprees, Bobby Wilson, performing the music of his father, Jackie Wilson, Dennis Tufano from the Buckinghams, and emceed by comedian Scott Wood. That's at the California Theater, December 29th. More at affordablemusicproductions.com. Now, when Lou Christie was first starting out, his teachers wanted him to go toward classical singing and performance. But Lou had his sights set elsewhere, American Bandstand.
Now, the latest record, how long has it been on? It isn't a long time, is it?
No, it's just been out about a week and a half.
Let's do it, all right?
Great.
It's entitled, Have I Sinned?
Of course, I sang in the choir, and I was the lowest bass and the highest soprano and the whatever I could do. I did all the solos. And I really, really, to this day, I still love choral music and classical stuff. But, you know, I was a teenager in America, but it was taken off.
What or who got you going towards so much falsetto?
I don't know how it happened. I used to listen to R&B records, you know, people like the Flamingos or the Five Keys. And,
oh, there it is.
You know,
there
were groups. And then all of a sudden there was someone maybe in the background that would do the high parts, you know, the woo, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought that was all cool. I always liked the vocal group. You know, I had my sister in a group and then a friend of mine, Bill. So it was like two girls and two boys. But I liked that combination of harmonies. I didn't necessarily start out. I was more interested in having a vocal group, not a band. I never played with a band until I walked into the studio, and there were musicians there. But I would jump in the background because I used to love to do harmonies. You know, harmonies was like a very big thing for me.
Certainly. You said this earlier, and I almost laughed out loud, not because it's a funny thing, because not too many people can be the lowest bass and the highest tenor or soprano.
I know.
That's just cool.
Quite a thing. And it was funny because my conductor used to say, oh, you stop singing that way, you know, because I could vocalize with that vocal. And, you know, and I don't know how many people, so you're going to lose your voice by the time you're 19. Well, I'm not 19, and I still have my voice, and I'm still singing in the same keys.
Yes.
I knock on wood every day.
Certainly.
And I try not to think about it because I don't know. I didn't overanalyze myself and all that stuff about my voice. I just do it, and I don't think about it. I just go out and do it, you know, because the more you become neurotic, it becomes an obsession, and it creates blocks in your mind and things like that. So I just don't even talk about it. I just do it.
Will the defendant please step forward?
Talk about the jury for a second. This is maybe your earliest hit, although at much more of a regional level. Is this something?
Yeah, it was a regional hit. You know, there was a guy who produced the Skyliners, and I thought, oh my gosh, they're from Pittsburgh, and I'm only 35 miles away from Pittsburgh, so if they can do it, I can figure out how to do this. And I did. And I met Lenny Martin, the guy who arranged all the Skyliner records, This I Swear, Pennies from Heaven, all those Since I Don't Have You. And somehow I went up there and I started talking to him. And he said, let me hear you sing. And he started playing the piano and I sang. And he said, oh, it's really good. And then he used to play jazz and I sang jazz. And I, you know, just in time and whatever I was doing, you know, because he knew all about music, you know. He said, what's interesting? He said, I have a girl I'm going to be cutting a record with. And he says, do you know anyone else who could maybe sing background with you? Or so? I said, oh, I have a group. I said, of course, we sound like Three Mice. I said, it's a new sound. I said, it's really, really original. And so I went home and I talked to Bill, my friend, and a girl. I said, come on, Kay, we've got to go. We got a chance to audition next week to sing background for this girl. She's cutting a record. And lo and behold, we went up there, and he just laughed. He said, oh, this is great, because I sang falsetto with the girl, and it was just a new sound, you know, with three sort of very close harmonies. And we whined a lot, you know. You know, so it was like, oh, my God. But they put us on the record, and the dang thing became a hit, you know. And it was Marcy Joe singing Ronnie Come Back.
Oh,
but the attention, we started getting attention because the background, they said, who's singing in the background? Because there was a sound to the record. It just wasn't a girl singing a song. It was the sound of that record. And it was us in the background, and which really added to it. And then we cut again since Gary went in the Navy, and it happened again. And we cut the B-sides and everything. But he really enjoyed us. Never got paid. We never got paid for it.
Right.
he said, why don't I let you cut your own record, which then became Lucci and the Lions. And that was me and my sister and Bill again. And we always had that one girl we always had to change. That was Amy, and then it was Kay, and then it was, you know. But my sister was Amy, and she really didn't want to be in show business. But I just kept pulling her into it. Oh, Amy, you got to help me out, you know. So she did at every chance she could. And she was a very pretty girl, like Annette Funicello was, and, you know, and that kind of a real Italian pretty girl, you know.
Yep.
So I thought, oh, I can make her a star.
I had some trouble with my baby, so I had my fortune read. I had some trouble with my baby, and this is what the gypsy said. The gypsy
When did you start going by Lou Christie? Was this around the time of The Gypsy Cried?
That was the first record, yeah. I was under Luigi. People used to call me Luigi instead of Luigi or whatever.
Right.
So it became Luigi and the Lions for about a year there. And then when I recorded The Gypsy Cried, that it became Lou Christie. I had nothing to do with picking that name. I was so angry at that point because I walked into the office and I said, well, I think I want to use maybe just my one name, maybe just Luigi. Or, you know, I had some other names figured out. You know, very Italian kind of a thing, because that was very popular at the time, you know, with the word baby in and all that stuff. And they said, oh, your name's Lou Christie. You know, I said, oh, you didn't even ask me. I mean, it was like, well, the record's coming out today. It'll be in the office or something like that today. Or so I said, huh? So my name was Lou Christie, and I thought, oh, God. It took me years to, like, sort of get over it. But the record became a hit so quickly that it was like, I'm Lou Christie, you know. And my dad said, it's going to bring you luck. He said, it's going to work because it had Christ's name in it.
Oh.
So he was a real Italian, old-fashioned Italian who thought that way. You know, he was just a good person, and he said, it's going to bring you luck.
Beautiful. Well, that's a great way of looking at it.
I've lived longer being Lou Christie than Luigi Alfredo Giovanni Zacco.
Yeah, you know that. I had to read that somewhere. Going back to Dick Clark for a second, that was your original goal, and you ended up on the Dick Clark Caravan Tour. So I'd like to hear how this came together, the Dick Clark thing. Is it your manager getting a call, or somebody initiating something with Clark's people, or because you had the hits, they contacted you? Tell me how this kind of thing works.
Exactly, because the record came out on a small little local label in Pittsburgh called C&C.
Mm.
And that was a distributing. That was also a distributing company for the tri-state area. A few guys there, you know, would distribute the records by Dionne Warwick. But, you know, they were like a one-stop.
Yeah.
You know what that means, you know. And so anyhow, Morris Levy used to bring his records into Pittsburgh. And Morris owned Roulette Records and, you know, who had the Chantels and the Flamingos. And they knew him, and the record started taking off on a little local thing because I went and I did some record hops and a couple really TV shows with Gypsy Cried. And they, all of a sudden, it was like, oh, my God, we sold 9,000 records today, or we sold 2,000 records this afternoon. It's really selling. So Morris Levy, they were friends with him. He put the record out on Roulette, and that was the end of it. It started going and sold 1 million records, you know. And so I then had to do American Bandstand in Philadelphia. They asked me to go do that. And one thing led to another, and then all of a sudden I was someone who had to be booked. So they put me on the Dick Clark Caravan, so after I did the TV show and did, I think, 32 one nights in a row. That was my first one, you know. Then I did a couple other ones. I went on for I don't know how many years doing those.
Wow.
I mean, there I was sitting. Well, my bus buddy was Diana Ross.
Nice.
Because I said, she was, to me, she was magic. I mean, she was magical. And I thought, oh, my God, this girl. I remember seeing her on television. I said, oh, she just did something to me. I said, this is it. So we sat on our bus and slept on the bus every other night on the Dick Clark Caravan, because I was on the bus with the Supremes and Dee Dee Sharp and Johnny Tillotson, Gene Finney, the Crystals, Brian Hyland, you know, Ruby and the Romantics, the Orlans, you know, I mean, it was just chock full of everyone who had records in the top 20 or top 100.
Yeah, wow.
And that was the show. We had one band, and we drove around America sitting on that bus, on an old Greyhound bus. We didn't even have a bathroom on it.
Oh, no.
No, we had, you would do stops, and, you know, and we traveled through the South. It was like a freedom bus. We had a lot of trouble. I mean, it was already 1963, and not too much had changed. You know, we're down in the South, in New Orleans or Mississippi or North Carolina, South Carolina, and they would say, oh, well, you can't go on because the band's white and the group's black, and what are you doing on this bus, and that, all that. We had trouble, and Dick Clark said, listen, it's all of us. We either go on, put the show on at 8 o'clock tonight, or we don't go on. None of us go on. And that's the way he dealt with the interracial thing. And Dick traveled with us, too. He sat two seats ahead of me on the bus.
He was stuck on the bus, too.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was for the longest time, for the first couple of years. Sometimes he would then fly in and then record a couple bandstands and then fly back and get on the bus. But he would sleep on the bus with us, too, and, you know.
Nice.
Yeah, he was really a trooper. It was like he was not just sliding by. That man worked, and he was on a schedule to the day he died. He had radio shows going on, and he would introduce us and then go back and do his radio show in the dressing room, and then they'd call him and say, Dick, Lou's off stage, can you know, bring him off his last song, and he'd run out and do his thing, introduce the Shirelles or something, or and back in there and doing his syndicated radio shows. He was just a worker. I've never seen anyone like that.
Look out, old Maggie is back.
That's Lou Christie, part of Legends of the 60s, along with the Duprees, Bobby Wilson, Dennis Tufano from the Buckinghams, and emceed by comedian Scott Wood. That's at the California Theater December 29th. More at affordablemusicproductions.com. I understand you had a bit of a hiatus in the singing career due to a stint in the Army.
I was taken right off of the bus. Literally, the last day of the tour, on one of Dick Clark's shows, I had to go to Fort Knox.
Oh, no.
And check in. So I got on the train to Fort Knox, and I was down there a few months, and, I was kept thinking of, I got to get on the charts again. You know? And I darn well did, because it became Lightning Strike.
Yeah. Well, that's the biggest in my eyes, anyway. Just to put it in perspective, I was born when that song came out. I'm well-versed in the 50s and stuff due to my mom's At the Hop Records and stuff. But I swear it stayed on the radio, it seemed, through my childhood. I even thought it was a 70s song at one point in my life, not something from 66.
You know, you're absolutely right, and I felt the same way, and thank God it did, because it lasted for a decade. I mean, it just lasted on and on.
Yeah.
And then with the oldie stations, they played it like it was the number one record.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a number one record, but they played it like it still was, you know. And it became then, I don't know, just part of our texture in music in America at that point, which I was so lucky, because then it became hits in other countries, too. So I was running around the world doing the record because it was a hit and doing TV shows. And
yeah.
That was my first trip to England, and that was exciting, you know. And then I had other hits in other countries, and so I was going back and forth from England, and then I finally ended up moving there for a few years, you know.
Yeah. Is it fact or fiction, then, with Lightning Strikes, that MGM disliked the song?
Disliked it. The guy threw it in the garbage can, thought he was cute. He said, this thing is right. I'm not going to do anything. Well, 3 months after that, he was presenting me with a gold record and taking a picture for Billboard magazine. And that was so funny. I said, Lenny. Lenny's not with us anymore. Lenny Shear was his name. You know, thank you for the gold record, Lenny. I remember when you threw it in the garbage can. They didn't like it. They said, that's not going to be a hit.
Wow.
Well, lo and behold, it was.
Well, one more with Lightning Strikes. I understand Peggy Santiglia was one of your backup singers.
She sure was.
And so this would be right around the time she and the rest of the Angels hit it with My Boyfriend's Back, or where's
right.
the timeline there?
Yes, it was. Matter of fact, I remember sending them a telegram. I was on a caravan, and I heard My Boyfriend's Back, and I thought, oh, God, is this a hit?
Yeah.
So I sent them a thing. And then that was the girls who then recorded Lightning With Me, Rhapsody in the Rain, and those two albums.
Yeah, yeah.
It was Peggy who did Thank You and Goodnight and My Boyfriend's Back and all that stuff. And so it was Peggy and Bernadette Carroll. I wanna be ya. Party girl.
Oh, party girl. Oh, wow. Okay.
She was then in the Angels, and then Denise. So almost like an inversion of Angels, you know, but Peggy was always there, and Bernie was always on the Angel record. Mm-hmm. But I used those girls, the three of them. Oh, we had so much fun, and they got the sound that I wanted, you know, because before that, I was just my sister and all these, you know, and my local friends, and when we wrote the songs, Twyla and I, we wrote the background. We knew exactly what we wanted, the crazy backgrounds, and make it more interesting. And that was that sound again, that sound that I said it was on Three Mice, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just kept it going because I knew that sound was my own sound, you know. And I don't know if it was from my sister and I washing dishes and drying dishes that would sing while we were doing that, you know. Singing all this little background. My mom used to sing, too. She had a great voice.
Yeah, beautiful.
Whole family sang. I thought everyone could sing. I didn't think it was anything really that different, except that I really loved the harmonies and things and singing, you know.
Wow.
And I didn't know until I got to school or got out in the world and said, people can't sing. A lot of people can't sing.
Why doesn't your family do this?
My dad had perfect pitch. My mother sang with the big bands before I was even born.
Really?
And they sang, and we did harmonize. My dad played the guitar, and he played the same bad four chords over and over again, all these old songs from the Depression, you know. And he had a great voice. To the day he died, my mother did too. And Amy sang on my early records with me. And even my sisters, and they can still sing. My brother has a fantastic voice too.
Mm.
So everyone was blessed with this musicality, you know.
That's really great to be brought up in that kind of a household. That is phenomenal. That is phenomenal.
Well, that was the best part of it, you know, besides the chickens and the cats and the dogs and the goats and things. I loved those little animals. They were just so cute. But I yearned for harmonies. I just loved harmonies. My favorite group was like the McGuire sisters.
Oh, wow.
You know, harmonies
yeah.
like that. I just loved it.
That was Lou Christie, part of Legends of the 60s, along with the Duprees, Bobby Wilson, son of Jackie Wilson, Dennis Tufano from the Buckinghams, and emceed by comedian Scott Wood. That's at the California Theater December 29th. More at affordablemusicproductions.com. Also, that was just a portion of a past interview with Lou Christie. You can find the entirety at kvcrnews.org/arts. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Lou Christie, Ben Rue, Aaron Sines, and Julie Edwards-Matanga. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Sharina Wad, Benjamin Perper, Jesse Rosales, and KVCR General Manager Keith Birkfeld. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. And again, you can hear past KVC Arts programs at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Go to kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.